Big Red Revival.
Week one of the college football season is officially in the books, and Zach, stop me if you've heard this before, but Nebraska loses a heartbreaking heartbreaking game on a last-second field goal in another one-possession game. The Matt Rhule era starts off with a loss as Nebraska falls to Minnesota 13-10 and on a walk-off field goal to start the Matt Rhule era off of. I guess there's so much things to say. You know, I really don't even know where to start with this. I mean, obviously the deja vu and Groundhog's Day, you know, that type of hyperbole would probably be a good place. But Zach, I guess first thing I want to say is college football, man, what a hell of a sport. What a hell of a sport. Outside of, you know, us having our heart broken Thursday night, you know, the rest of the week was, you know, some great action. So what a sport. But, you know, once again, Nebraska falls late to Minnesota in another one-possession loss. Zach, what's your initial thoughts on what we saw in game one of the Matt Rhule era?
Well, to prepare myself for this episode, as I sent you, I listened to Eminem's Same Song and Dance because that's just what it's what it feels like, man. It's tough. It's just another one of those games where I will admit that in the fourth quarter and even third quarter, it felt a little different. I mean, you felt like we might, you know, just have, you know, outmanned them and just kind of worn them down a little bit. We let them have the ball pretty much all of the first half. And then second half, it looked like we were just, you know, just one play away from really, really taking over not even taking over the game, but really just getting it in hand where we felt like, you know, with as much offensive struggle as we had in the game, you know, if there's a two possession game at any point, you know, you feel like you're in pretty good shape. So we were that close again, and again, same song and dance. You know, we put in the guy at running back who, I mean, I will say was probably running the ball the most effectively. But, you know, it's just, he was the guy that was putting the ball on the ground the whole fall camp. And that's who's running the ball for us at the end. And then again, we have a quarterback that, you know, just continues to throw the ball to the other team. And
loves throwing the ball to the other team.
And that's what happens, you know, at the end of the game to, you know, ultimately put the game away. And so it's frustrating. But you know, what can you say? We've discussed how this feels enough. So what are you going to do?
Yeah. You know, and for me, it's not the fact that we lost. It's how we lost. And it's not that, oh, another one possession game. Cause if this would have been a 27-24 game, you know, and Minnesota had the lead most of the game and, you know, it just finished up that way. It was the fact that obviously a walk-off field goal doesn't feel good, but it was the fact that Matt Rhule, you know, his mantra was just get me to the fourth quarter. Fourth quarter is where games are won. Fourth quarter, fourth quarter, fourth quarter, fourth quarter. I don't want to start fast. I'll just get me to the fourth quarter, and that's when football games are played. And, you know, you couple that with him, I don't know if you want to call it throwing Anthony under the bus about fumbling in practice, and then, you know, with him, you know, consequently fumbling to basically lose the game, I guess. I think it was just, you know, with Matt Rhule preaching that fourth quarter and then his first game as a Nebraska head coach promptly blows a fourth quarter lead is just kind of where it got me out. I was sitting there watching all game. I'm like, hey, this is the kind of game he wanted to play. This is the type of game he wanted to play. And, you know, 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter, you're like, shit, you know, he's actually going to do what he said he was going to do. And, you know, a bad fumble and a terrible interception. And next thing you know, it's bing, bang, boom. Nebraska beat another heartbreaking fashion to Mr. Row Your Boat up there in Minneapolis, which makes that now five years in a row, Minnesota has beat Nebraska. It's hard not to get down on yourself and get down on this team and this program. But, you know, they're outside of the loss, and obviously if we would have recorded this podcast Thursday night after the game, we would have been, you know, hey, we're going 0-12, doom and gloom, and this is the same old bullshit we've been seeing for the last 7-8 years. But I think we saw a lot of positives in the game. Obviously, we were kind of wondering what that 3-3-5 defense was going to look like, whether that was going to be able to hold up in the Big Ten and stop the run. And, you know, that question was answered at least week one. You know, Minnesota, a big run heavy, big offensive line, good run team. Nebraska was able to shut them down. And, you know, they held Minnesota to 61 total yards in the second half. And you'd like to be able to think that's enough to get the job done. And then special teams. You know, there was the talk of who was going to be the kicker. And, you know, if you got two kickers, you don't have one. And the thing about fair catching the ball and always wanting to return it. And so you kind of sit back and look and you go, okay, well, Nebraska looked good in two of three phases of the football game. You know, is that where you come out on it? Or, Zach, how do you, give us what you're thinking on the bright side of what you saw Thursday. What positives did you come away with from Thursday's game?
Yeah, I mean, definitely defensively, I think we looked the part, especially, I mean, we were way ahead of where I thought we'd be with a brand new defense and just ultimately just our mantra that we came out with as a defensive unit. You know, I saw DBs coming up and just sticking people, and we haven't seen that in a while. And it didn't matter if it was a corner, a safety, you know, anybody. You know, we were coming up, we were hitting them, we were gang tackling, we were getting helmets to the ball, and I appreciated that. I thought it looked a lot different, and I feel good about where we're at. You know, you can say what you want about that one touchdown pass, but that was a fantastic route that the guy ran, an even better catch.
Yeah, so, an all-time catch. I mean,
Yeah, and you think about it, I mean, through three quarters, we gave up 3 points. And so as much time as our defense spent on the field to give up 13 points, and, you know, that Minnesota quarterback they had, he was new to that role. You know, he had played behind Tanner Morgan, who had been there for 10 years.
Yep.
And I feel like, you know, more so than not, he made some plays. I mean, we were definitely getting pressure on him, and we were bringing the heat, and we threw a lot at him. He didn't have a run game to fall back on. And so for the most part, I feel like he played a pretty decent game, and he didn't turn the ball over when it mattered the most. He made the play at the end when it mattered. He got
one quarterback made the play and one quarterback didn't, basically. Yep.
And so, you know, hats off to the defense. You know, they definitely stood their ground for the most part in special teams, like you said. Boom Sheeney, he came out, mm-hmm. did his part. You know, unfortunate the way that we got the ball the first time when they put it down on the 6-inch yard line. Why would it not start that way for this team? But, you know, We got the best push from our offensive line that we got all night on that first play on the QB sneak. And then Tristan Alvano came out and he did his thing, you know, in a hostile environment. You're kicking into a student section that I hear was pretty rowdy. And so hats off to him. But unfortunately, our offense just didn't do their part, unfortunately. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, we play well in two of the three facets of the football game. You know, also we were kind of wanting to see what Jeff Sims looked like. Jeff Sims, as you know, we mentioned in the first episode, came into the first game of the season as the leading turnover guy in the country. He had 21 INTs already in 3 years, and unfortunately, he lived up to the billing. Two of the three were just horrendous INTs. I mean, the one before the half, you're taking points off the board there. You know, not to mention, you know, false starting there on the goal line when we were just about to sneak it in. It was the whole game was just inches away from being a victory for us. I mean, the play before the last play of the game, but the last touchdown where he toe taps it, the play before that where Gifford damn near has an INT. It's like, you know, we get that, the game's over. It's just a bunch of one-offs, you know, the false start. On who was the lineman that jumped down there?
Ethan Piper.
Yep. And, you know, and then with the tight end, I think it was Borcher that false started again on the goal line when we were down there the next time. It's just, I don't know. I kind of felt that Sims was kind of rushing it down there and didn't give his guys the time to get set and get ready, I guess. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you jumped. And just, or the Gabe Irvin or the touchdown where, you know, his elbow was almost was quite down, but you know, he was leaning across and they went and reviewed it. It was kind of a bang bang play. It was just a bunch of one play items that just, you know, just really doomed us, you know. And, you know, like I said, stop me if you've heard it before, but it just, I don't know, just couldn't lose any more heartbreaking fashion. But, you know, I think that obviously I predicted us to lose game one, and, you know, we're looking to go into game two on the road and playing a Colorado team that had a, you know, a win total of 2.5 games. You know, I think we're all kind of excited to see what Colorado looked like. And I think people are ready to start throwing dirt all over the Colorado program. And unfortunately, you know, Saturday we found out he is him.
They are here.
Yeah, they is here, as, you know, the whole country found out. And yeah, and everybody knows, obviously, you haven't been living under a rock. That's all that's been talked about. And, you know, once again, Nebraska finds itself in the number one spotlight game of the weekend. You know, for a team that's been absolutely horrendous, a 3-4 win team. I mean, how many times have we had the game of the week or the biggest game of the week or the most promoted game of the week? How many times have we been on the in the Big Fox, the Big Noon window in the last 2-3 years? It's just like it's like I feel like I haven't seen Wisconsin or Iowa, who are clearly better teams than us, or Minnesota. I swear I've never seen them in that window ever. And it's just always Nebraska. And it's like, you know, we played Oklahoma the last couple of years. Now it's Colorado. And now it's all eyes on, you know, Colorado versus Nebraska. I mean, just look at the ticket prices to get into what should be the biggest game. Texas at Alabama, you know, two top 10 teams. You can get a game ticket for $171. To walk in the door at Nebraska, Colorado, you're looking at $470 just to walk in the door and be up in the nosebleeds.
I saw a ticket on Twitter just now, and it was row 44, and it was $3,500.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, Jesus Christ. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And they're like, oh, yeah, it's because the Colorado. It's like, no, it's the tickets were already, you know, already high because of Nebraska. And like, oh, no, it's because of Deion. Well, like they said on there, the last sellout they had was when Nebraska came to town. So, you know, yeah, it's Deion, but yeah, it's Nebraska. It's 50-50. So, it's, you know, another big game and a big window with the national eyeballs on us. So, never good. But what'd you see in that Colorado TCU game? Was Colorado that good, or was TCU that bad?
I saw me some speed. I mean, as advertised, they have done nothing but talk about how talented and skilled their skill players are, and that was on full display. I mean, they had four receivers over 100 receiving yards. Shadur Sanders threw for over 500 yards with damn near perfect efficiency rating. Travis Hunter is one of the most dynamic players we've seen probably since Charles Woodson in college football.
I mean, Deion said he's got the Heisman chilling at the crib.
If they gave it out after week one, he certainly does. And I mean, he was at as advertised, and you never would think that a guy taking that jump from FCS to major D1 playing against the team that played in the national championship game last year would just dominate a game like he did. And so, I mean, I would be remiss to say that it wasn't impressive. I was taken back. I mean, you couldn't walk away from the TV when that game was on because you would miss something electric that would go down.
Right.
And so I would say it was definitely a headline of college football for the weekend. And it's certainly didn't make me feel any better about Saturday. You know, I told you after Thursday night, I was like, well, if we tune into Colorado and they look like shit, you know, maybe I'll feel better about everything that transpired tonight. But that's not how it played out.
No, it's not. Yeah, you know, and I don't know how to analyze what I saw from Colorado. It's like, you know, TCU really just played the exact kind of game Colorado was needing you to play. And, you know, the people that all the talk, you know, leading up to the game this season was about, you know, how small Colorado was in the trenches. And then TCU, you know, if you go and look at the stats, I think they were averaging 8 yards a carry, but they wanted to get in a gunslinging battle. And unfortunately, Colorado had a better quarterback and clearly the best player on the field, wide receiver corner that played 125 snaps. I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous. That's also not sustainable. You know, he is that guy, but 125 snaps a game is not something that is going to be sustainable throughout a whole season. So it's just, you know, obviously Nebraska plays a completely different football game and is looking to do a lot of different things. I think we had three possessions in the first half total, Nebraska did, and Colorado had nine possessions in the first half. So it just, it's going to be a completely different ball game. And I think TCU kind of played right into Colorado's hands. And, you know, people are actually surprised. It's like, Shedeur Sanders is a high four-star recruit with offers from Georgia and Alabama. And was the number one player in the country. So, you know, we shouldn't act Travis Hunter. We shouldn't act surprised that these guys went out and balled like that. I mean, especially go ahead.
What impressed me most is Shedeur Sanders. Like, I thought that they were going to be running him around a little bit more. I thought he was going to be more of a mobile guy. And that guy just was so comfortable in the pocket. It made me a little bit worried. Man. And the way that they attacked the flats, they went after the flats, got their players in space, and just let them do their thing. And what I'll say is they're a lot tougher than what I expected. Those receivers, that when they would get the ball, they could easily have gone out of bounds and just, you know, got the yards they got, but they were cutting back in, trying to get extra yards. And, you know, that would typically worry me a little bit, but the way that I saw our defensive backs primarily come up and make tackles like that, yep. I feel like maybe, you know, we can stick them a little bit more than TCU was. And like you said, you know, I don't know how good TCU's defense was. I really liked their linebacker, that number 57 with a neck brace. He was coming up,
Hodge,
and hit. He was coming up and hitting people and talking a little smack. I like that, but we need more of that because that's what you got to do. I mean, you never want to play another team's game, and especially, you know, a team like this where, you know, they kind of thrive on
you're out at the same time. You know, you don't want to play a game like that where you're out athleted, you know, Colorado had better athletes than TCU.
Yeah, but if you can come up and start making some plays and sticking them a little bit and not letting them break off, you know, 8-9 yards every play, you know, they're going to humble a little bit, and you know, they might get out of their head a little bit.
Yeah, and you know, I think the secondary play and the tackling was definitely, you know, a bright spot for Nebraska. You know, Omar Brown and Deshaun Singleton, the two newcomers to the defense, the guys that we didn't really get to see play much last year. I thought those guys were the best players on the team for us. Those guys were good in coverage, and like you said, they were coming up hitting. And, you know, also I kind of just wanted to mention the training staff, I guess, the conditioning. The conditioning for Nebraska looked great. The guys looked bigger and stronger, and no one looked tired out there. You know, I thought the conditioning and the physiques of the players all looked really good. Defense played great. You know, we had talked about last week the Bullock boys, the two kids from Creighton Prep, linebacker, and then the brother wide receiver. I thought those guys really, really played well. Obviously, the wide receiver had the wide open, you know, Osborne trick play touchdown or whatever. And so, maybe our wide receivers didn't get really much chance to shine. But, you know, I thought the linebacker Bullock really played well. But the defense, it was just, I guess it was – it was kind of shocking to see how well they played against the run on a three-man front. You know, the polar bear up there, Huttmacher, you know, God, he looked big as hell. I don't know if it was just because he was number zero, stretched him out a little bit, but I thought he played a great game. Unfortunately, you know, Ty Robinson, you know, made that dumbass play of, you know, getting a late shot in the quarterback and, you know, just to top it off, decided to dip his crown of his helmet to, you know, get a targeting call. So he's going to be missing the first half of this game. My boy Blaze Gutherson, you know, was getting a little pressure in there, got himself a sack. The defensive line just, you know, they really shut down that run of which you thought Minnesota was going to be able to run the ball on us. So,
The wide receivers 55 yards rushing. I mean, that's
exactly.
That's crazy.
Yeah, you got to love that. So, you know, the thing we're going to be trying to do, I guess, against Colorado is keep everything underneath like we did against Minnesota, come up, make the tackles. And the thing that we didn't do early against Minnesota was get the stops on third down. We had a lot of third down conversions go against us early. The final numbers, I think they were about 50% or just under 50%. But the first half, I think they're about 80% conversion rate. So you just got to be able to get off the field on third down. And then on offense against Colorado, obviously, you know, run the goddamn ball. make Travis Hunter come up and, you know, make some tackles. I mean, a guy like that, I mean, he's a little light in the ass. I mean, I think he's a buck 65. So I think, you know, the last thing he wants to do is come up and run support. Obviously, he's going to be a better athlete and a better player than anybody we line up out at wide receiver. So we need to have him make him come up and play some defense and make some tackles and put some hits on people. So I guess I want to circle back to Jeff Sims. What did you see out of him? You've played quarterback at the collegiate level. A guy that's clearly had turnover problems in his whole career. Like I said, he's the number one interception guy in the whole country. 24 INTs heading into Saturday. What kind of things did you see from him? What was the mechanics off? Was he obviously a lot of people talked about him throwing off the back foot, staring guys down. Can you just speak to kind of the quarterback play and how you can, maybe avoid some of these interceptions? Can the coaches help out on some front? What other things can we do to help the quarterback out?
Yeah, I mean, I think it just started off. We were thrown off from the get-go because we got that ball on the 6-inch yard line and we couldn't ever be on script. And that's big because you practice that 15 to 20 play script, you know, to all ends. I mean, that's what you go through hundreds of times during camp, and immediately being thrown out of your original game plan does throw things off. But from a mechanics and just, talent standpoint, I guess, a lot of staring guys down. I wouldn't say he ever really looked uncomfortable out there.
Right.
I feel like he was really decisive when he did tuck the ball and just take off. And when he did make throws, you know, there were a couple where he was a little bit off, off his back foot, but, it just never seemed like we got it in a rhythm where he had guys downfield that were visibly open outside of maybe that end zone throw where he threw it to the back corner instead of hitting his guy right in the chest who could have fallen backwards and gotten in the end zone. And
yep, had him on a little curler out right there.
And, and that's how it goes sometimes. And, there's never a time where you want to make excuses for somebody. But when you're not in your normal rhythm that you want to be in from the beginning, after all you've gone through with fall camp and everything, it can be tough to get in that rhythm, especially as this game was a slobber knocker, with possessions in the first half were, a dime a dozen. We couldn't get the ball back. And right. When we did, I will say, we did sustain some decent time of possession drives. The three drives we had in the first half went 4.5 minutes, 7 minutes and 40 seconds, and then 5 minutes. And, what was the frustrating one drive of the whole game that I still don't understand was fourth quarter, when we come out there, it's tied 3-3, and we run three straight pass plays, right. And we're off the field in less than a minute.
Yep.
And so it's like nothing about that whole game and any part of Jeff Sims' performance told me that we're in a position to where we can come out and throw three straight times. Hit the first pass he did have in that drive was overthrown to Tommy Hill, which we have Casey Thompson in there. He probably hits him in stride for a touchdown, but
yeah, exactly.
It is what it is. So I just feel like he never really got in a rhythm, and when he did throw the ball, he was really staring guys down.
Yeah, exactly. Like that opening first place shot. I mean, the guy was beat. Our guy was open, and that could have been. I understand wanting to go for the knockout blow there, but then to try to go the next two pass plays and basically go three and out in 30 seconds wasn't conducive to our game plan. And like you said, I think we kind of just got off a script from the very first jump when they punted it down to the the 1 foot line. And yeah, the biggest push our offensive line got was on that quarterback sneak. We talked last week about we have a lot of guys on the offensive line who've played a lot of football for us. And you're thinking, okay, these guys, probably aren't going to be worse than they were last year, which it's hard to be because they were fucking the worst offensive line in the country. And you're just thinking, okay, this is going to be a little bit more run-focused team. This is going to be able to lean on some guys. And they were just as bad as they were last year. obviously Ben Scott graded out the best, the transfer in from Arizona State, the center. But, they still – weren't very good. And it just keeps bringing me back to that part in Hard Knocks, where the Jets coach is talking about, you know, you can have an all-world quarterback and offensive rookie of the year wide receiver and three stud running backs and a good tight end room, but till the fucking big guys up front decide who the hell this team's going to be, and none of it fucking matters. And that's exactly what it is. Nothing matters until the fucking the pipeline guys up front, you know, actually do something and decide what this team's going to be, because as the offense line goes, the team's going to go. You know, I thought when Sims dropped back, he had a lot of pressure on him. I did think he stepped up in the pocket pretty well, you know, to avoid some,
especially early.
Yeah. Avoid some blitzers, and some free guys. But, you know, if the offense line is going to be playing how they played last year and how they played through this, first game, it's going to be another long season for us. It's going to be another long season of us complaining about, you know, the offensive line. And then you're still going to see, you know, Nebraska Twitter out there promoting this fucking pipeline jerky bullshit. I mean, I can't believe fucking people buy this shit. I mean, absolutely ridiculous. Imagine just, oh, yeah, let's support the worst fucking, you know, position group on the team. Unless the pipeline jerky money is going to buy me some new offensive fucking linemen, I'm not eating this shit, okay? Those guys are a fucking joke. And I can't believe that, you know, the guys of the 90s even allow them to put their name on it. Like, the pipeline, like, you guys are out your fucking mind. Like, give me a break with that shit. Give me a fucking break. I can't stand it. I cannot stand it. And every dollar proceeds of that stuff needs to be going to replacing every single player on that offensive line. So I'm just going to be real. I mean, come on, guys. Like, give me something else. But back to the game plan. I thought we were going to, you know, we talked last week about Nebraska being, we felt good about our running back room, felt pretty decent about our tight ends. And we thought it's going to be, all right, three running backs and then a lot of Gabe Irvin and some Kemp. And, you know, we're like, okay, let's see Thomas Fedoni finally healthy. Let's see what we got here. And we got absolutely nothing out of them, and not any doing of their own. Just the plays weren't there. The ball wasn't thrown to Fedoni once, right? Or was the ball thrown to Kemp at all either? Did he have a catch?
Our third string quarterback had more catches and yards than Billy Kemp
and Thomas Fedoni. And then all of a sudden you see Heinrich Harburg, or, you know, our backup quarterback out here catching, you know, third down balls. It's just like, I don't know. It didn't seem to be, you know, any rhyme or reason to what the offense was doing. It was just like, guys, we're looking to run the ball and, you know, throw to our tight ends and our little underneath guys. And that was exactly what we did not get on Thursday night. You know, to see Sims, we knew he was going to have to be involved in the run game, but he had 19 rushes. The next guy had 7. So that is not a winning recipe. It just, you know, was reminiscent of Adrian Martinez again. And I felt like, you know, obviously the quarterback run game was working, but, you know, they just kind of didn't have a second trick. It was just like, okay, all right, run him again. And it just, I don't know. I'm hoping they just kind of got off their play sheet, you know, on the first down, having to go from the, you know, the 1 foot line. But that was not what we were expecting at all to see out of Nebraska's offense. And, you know, there's a couple ways to look at it. You can look at it as, well, Jeff Sims can't play a worse game than he did, right? I mean, it can't be any worse than he did. I mean, he was the best player on the field. And unfortunately, it was just, he was the best player for Minnesota on Thursday. So it's, you know, it's basically Adrian Martinez again, at least through week one. It just, I don't know. What you want to elaborate a little bit more on the Jeff Sims?
Yeah. You got anything else? I think that, you know, Jeff Sims, I think that we can put together a pretty good, solid game plan for Colorado and really just be able to dictate the tempo based on what I've seen. I think, again, that Nebraska-Minnesota game was a lot of bigger, stronger, maybe not as fast, but, you know, just more physical guys than what we saw with Colorado and TCU.
Right.
And so I think that we can really run the ball straight ahead at Colorado more than what they saw. And, you know, TCU probably could have done that a little bit more. They just got caught up in a shootout with Colorado.
Right.
And so if we can come out and we have some, you know, Jeff Sims, he threw the ball 19 times and he ran the ball 19 times. And so I think if we can just bring both of those numbers maybe down to 15 and then distribute it a little bit more to the running backs, and really control the line of scrimmage and continue with these long sustained drives, that's gonna help us a lot. We need to slow the game down. Even as slow of a game as it seemed like, Minnesota still threw the ball 44 times, which seems crazy. And they threw for less than 200 yards. And so that's got to tell you a little bit. Shedeur Sanders is not going to play a lights out game like that again, especially against a defense that seems to be pretty stout, seems to be pretty aggressive like we have. Yep. And so I feel like if we can come out and really just, we need to take the ball. I will say that. I hate taking the ball at first, but we do. We need to take the ball, and we need to just run down
the clock. Take the air out of the ball.
7-8 minutes. Oh, yep. Yeah. And just
take the air out of the ball.
Slow them down. Keep that offense of Colorado's on the sideline for a while. Let them kind of just calm down after the excitement and of them running out with that stupid buffalo and just really slow things down.
Yep.
And let them, let them start making mistakes. Let us just really kind of bully ball them around. I think that's where you put Jeff Sims in the best position to be better next week.
Yeah, there's nothing that gets a quarterback and a fast-paced offense more out of the rhythm than, sitting on the sidelines for 20 minutes. It's, a 6-7 minute drive, eating up 20 minutes of real time. There's nothing that's going to slow a high-paced offense down. And TCU just played exactly how Colorado was looking to play and just, got beat at their own game. I guess it's kind of what TCU wants to do too. They just didn't have the dogs or the horses that Colorado did. Speaking of, since I said it, dogs and leaders, did you notice the L's and D's on the Colorado chest, where the C is? The leaders and dogs, apparently that's what Colorado's is going with. And so I guess, I kind of just want to talk about, Dion and all the hype that led up to Saturday and, we're coming, it was the most hyped game, hyped team, hyped coach that I think we've probably ever seen in college football. And, to come in there, we talked about they're coming in Gucci sunglasses and they're 20-point dogs coming on the road against the team that was just in the national championship game last year. And then to come out and do what they did, it's just, It just kind of was reminiscent to me. I kind of compared it to the LeVar Ball, where the guy just talking shit and everybody's hating on him. Like, oh, he's going, my son's going to the Lakers. My son's this and that. And next thing you know is, his son's getting drafted by the Lakers, number 2 overall. And it's just like when a guy talks all that shit that Dion did, and, I was definitely looking, for him to get shut up. But when he comes out and backs it up, you just got to tip your cap to the guy. What is your whole take on Dion's approach and kind of all the media and everything that's kind of encompassed this whole Dion and Colorado thing and for him to come out and, put on a show like that the first game of the season?
Yeah, 2 words. I'm impressed and I'm jealous because he backed up every word he's ever said. And there is a lot of skeptics out there. There's a lot of people saying, oh, well, there's no way. He turned this roster around like nobody's ever done. He had 82 guys that are no longer on the program that were here last year. And he had one returning defensive player on his defensive staff who in turn got an interception in the end zone during the game on Saturday. It's incredible to me just to see how good they looked as opposed to what I had expected to see on Saturday. Like you said, they look small in every video I saw, and then all of a sudden I turn on Big Noon kickoff, and they didn't look small anymore. And they had those icy whites on that looked awesome. I was so glad to see Dion not wearing the cowboy hat. I think that's too cheesy. And it's Colorado. It's not like he's in Texas. What are we doing? just from top to bottom, outside of maybe their defense giving up 550 yards. They still got the win. I'll give it to them. But I just thought it was super impressive. And I was just really taken back by how crisp, how fast, how good they looked, how disciplined they were. They weren't getting stupid penalties out there. They were giving up yards, but at the same time they were, every time that they got punched in the mouth, they had a quick answer right back.
Sure did.
And that's a tough guy mentality. That's not getting down. That's not letting, little things in a game get you down, and that turn one little thing turns into a lot of little things. Like, obviously there's, you know, some powerful, you know, words. And did I see this right? Warren Sapp's their defensive line coach now.
I heard that rumor. I don't think that's actually true, though.
I don't think it is. You would have seen cameras would have been all over him. But
right.
I did see that going into the week. But, yeah, you know, and I've always been a big Deion Sanders fan. He's like my favorite athlete of all time. I had at one point in high school, I had like a shrine of him in my room because I just thought he was awesome. But I didn't want to ever see him as an opponent. And so here we are, but very right. impressed with just what I saw in, you know, the initial thing. It was much better than we ever saw from any first year coach we've had.
Yeah. And of course, you know, Nebraska fans, they're going to, you know, make the comparisons. Obviously we've got a first year coach, and why didn't Nebraska try to go after Deion? And, you know, Deion isn't what Nebraska needed. Okay. I'm trying to draw some comparisons to what we saw. And, you know, the first thing I thought was kind of like the stock market. And, you know, there's people that, they call them meme stocks now. You know, it's like, oh, I made a bunch of money trading GameStop stock. And it's like, made a bunch of money. And there's people that, you know, oh, I invest in waste management and, you know, pharmaceutical companies and, you know, take my 10% return and call it a day. And, you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat. You know, you kind of look at, is it sustainable? So you kind of want to maybe look at like a team like Michigan State with, you know, their first, Mel Tucker came in there, basically did the exact same thing Deion did, flipped the whole roster year one. You know, I think he brought in 50 plus guys, cleaned out a bunch of people, and they ended up going 11-3, I believe, that season. And since then, they've had two losing seasons. So it's like, all right, is it, you know, catching lightning in a bottle? Then you kind of want to look at Florida State. Now, Florida State, they hire new coach 3 years ago. First year, they go 4-8. The next year, they go 5-7. Last year, they go 10-3. And then this year, you look at it, and after week one, to me, looked like the best team in college football. So you can't look at – you can't look at everybody else's yard and be jealous of what they have, you know. I don't think Deion would have been right for Nebraska. We're looking to build long-term success. And as good as Deion looked week one, I don't think anybody thinks Deion's going to be there in 4 years. Do you think this is a long-term thing with him? I think it's a 2 years and under. I think when his son graduates and goes on to the pros, he's out of there too. So it's like, you know, you don't want to take some short-term gains for some long-term success, you know, like, I guess, what do you think about the, obviously the year one comparisons of Rhule and Deion, or, you know, does it make you have any buyer's remorse on getting Rhule after week one? I mean, there's, you know, idiots on Twitter, and I don't even know if they're probably not even real people, you know, they don't have real names and shit. So it's like, oh, fire Rhule and this, that, and the third. And, you know, we got the wrong guy. I guess, you know, what do you think about that whole situation?
Yeah, I don't think that we were ever in the market for Deion Sanders as our coach. And it's not for like any bad reason. It's just, it's really, I mean, University of Nebraska football team is a state really led program. We need a guy who's going to go up there and just kind of like, you know, just represent the state well and not take over the whole shebang. And that's, right. And that's what he wants. That's why he took Colorado. Cause they were going to let him do that. They were going to give him the keys. Yep. And they were going to let him drive. And there was never going to be a co-pilot. There was never going to be anybody else in the car. He was driving that and everybody else is in the back. Right. And so I think that, you know, that's kind of the situation he wanted to do or wanted to take on. And, you know, it's I commend him for coming in and just taking such ownership, you know, from the top to the bottom. Like, he's already got them out of the Pac-12 and into a, you know, probably maybe a better, obviously a better situation because Pac-12 is not going to be existent.
Right.
But I also do think that this is more of a stepping stone to him. And if he does have some success like he's had basically anywhere else he's gone as a coach, we're going to see him down in the SEC in probably 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Colorado isn't the end all be all. And I would be betting the unders if you're putting on Deion at 3.5 years at Colorado. You know, so it's just kind of, you know, do you want to take some short term games as opposed to long term success? But,
and,
you
and
know,
t- to add one thing else too. It's like, I don't think he's ever going to want to be going into the NFL as a coach. I think he appreciates the college landscape. He appreciates like developing kids, and you know, he's a big motivational type of guy, and that shit doesn't always fly with NFL players. You know, you're more of, you know, a manager as opposed to a leader,
correct,
in the NFL. And I think that, you know, he's more well built, to be a college coach, because he enjoys I don't know if he enjoys the grind as much as some other coaches. You know, I know Rhule, just based on what he said, he doesn't enjoy the grind. He likes going out there and recruiting and doing that type of thing. But I think Deion knows that in college football, he can be in the limelight no matter where he's at. And so he's here to stay.
Yeah, no, I mean, a couple people brought up like, you know, well, you got to be worried about a guy that wears, you know, his nickname logo bigger than the actual school logo on his uniform. You know, everything is Coach Prime, and then there's like a little Colorado, you know, symbol on there. But yeah, you know, I mean, I guess
that's a little brand though either.
No, it's he is him. You know, he is him. So no, you know, it. Shout out to Deion, man. I mean, it's exciting to watch. It sucks that we've got to play him. You know, I have no buyer's remorse through week one of the Matt Rhule era. I believe he's still a guy that can turn this program around and get Nebraska back to, you know, respectability. Like you said, and that's week one. And if you go back and you listen to all the press conference, he's basically telling you what he thought of the roster. You know, he's like, this is going to be a process, and it is going to be a process. And we saw some gains, right? We saw a defense look better. We saw our players look bigger, stronger, more in shape. We saw the special teams improve. Now it's okay. Now, you know, he's preaching the fourth quarter. Okay, well, you know, it's time to let's start focusing in on that and start winning some of these close games. We're not going to win every close game. You know, you can't win every one possession game. So it's just, you know, we saw some incremental advances from in week one already. So another thing that, you know, for some reason, I had no idea about going into week one. I had no idea about this new clock rule until Thursday night's game. I'm not sure how I missed that, but definitely a game changer. For those that are unaware of what I'm talking about here, obviously college football had always been the first down clock stops. And so as opposed to the NFL where the clock keeps running unless it's an incomplete pass. And so college football changed that, which really – as we alluded to back earlier, Nebraska only got three possessions in the first half, and it just kind of sped the game up, and they just tacked in more commercials on it. It was a big talking point all across college football on Twitter this weekend. What do you think of the new clock rule? Is that, I don't know. What'd you think of it?
Yeah. I mean, I did know about it going in. They do stop it on first downs inside 2 minutes of the first and second half. I think that's
second, fourth quarter. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And I think that's what the NFL does. And, so I'll compare it to, you know, I'm a baseball fan and we have the pitch clock this year. Hey. And I will say that it improved the quality of the game of baseball, this whole year. I mean, there were some games you got to watch in 2 hours and 15 minutes, and that makes the whole experience a lot more enjoyable.
Right.
As far as football goes, yeah, it's going to be kind of an adjustment, but at the same time, you know, that it's going to add another element of strategy, and it's going to make things, you know, a little bit tougher on offenses, because offense, you know, you get that little short time to reset and then, you know, kind of get your wits about you. And then you get to draw up a play. Whereas now it's like, okay, well, that's going to have to elevate the coaching, the play calling, and everyone involved. And I think that's where we saw some hiccups with Nebraska, because there was a couple times where we looked confused out there, and Rhule did make some good calls and called timeouts where we had to like, hey, let's level set. Let's get back to, you know, let's huddle up. Let's figure out what we're looking at here. Cause if we hadn't done that, you know, that ultimately leads to mistakes. It leads to turnovers. And the last thing we needed was another turnover. So I think it's going to really allow good coaches to kind of elevate above the rest, and good players to really, you know, play more situational football where they need to know that down and distance and know, you know, the situation of the game. And so I like it. I think it just enhances, you know, the whole game.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it because it shortens the game up, but it is going to help Nebraska in their style of football and how they're looking to play. It's going to, you know, limit possessions and, you know, make each possession more valuable. But, you know, with Nebraska's the way we think they want to play, you know, running the ball, being run heavy, you know, 3 yards in the cloud of dust type offense. I think it's going to help Nebraska, especially this week in Colorado. And those that are expecting Colorado to come out and look like they did on Saturday, you know, I think you're going to see a completely different thing. Styles make fights, and those two styles were basically, you know, run and gun type offenses. And, you know, with Nebraska running the ball and taking all the time off the clock and, you know, limiting possessions, you're going to see a completely different ball game. You know, going into the week, you know, Nebraska was a seven and a half point favorites. The line has moved all over. You don't see this kind of line movement, in betting, but, you know, I think it just kind of goes to, you know, people really didn't know what to expect out of Colorado. So Nebraska went to from 7.5 point favorites to, now they're +3. So 3 point dogs on the road to Colorado. And honestly, I thought the line was going to be a lot bigger in favor of Colorado. I thought it could be about, you know, 10 points, 10 to 12 points for them. Just, and, you know, maybe that was just me on Saturday, you know, being caught up in the sauce of what I was seeing from Colorado. But I just saw one website tweet out that this is tracking to be the highest bet game in the history of their site. Which is absolutely crazy. I also saw 96% of the money coming in on Colorado. You know, on yesterday, you know, it's Memorial Day off, you know, grilling with the family. You know, I ran the idea by the wife of, you know, maybe taking out, you know, 10 grand and taking it over to the casino to bet on Colorado. So I said, baby, there's no way we're winning this fucking game. There's no way. History tells me there's no way fucking Nebraska's win this game. You know, let's go, you know, let's go put 10 stacks on Colorado money line. Cause, you know, as you know, I bet $100 every single week against Nebraska. It's always money line because they'll fuck around and get beat, but cover, which is their favorite thing to do. So you never put it for them to cover. You put it money line on the other team. So like this last week, Minnesota, $100 to win $38. You know what? And it's like, oh, this is a little fucking. It's like, yeah, it's $38 I did not have before. So on a, you know, so. But the one thing I do know about gambling, when the public is all on one team and things are going in that direction, it's always the other way. I mean, and then the FPI on ESPN, which is usually a pretty good predictor, has Nebraska as a 60% win chance. And, you know, it's, you know, I think Husk guys tweeted out earlier about, you know, Thursday after the game, you're thinking, shit, we're going 0-12. Friday, you're like, all right, you know, special teams defense played pretty good. And then Saturday, you're like, fuck, Colorado's good. We're getting beat for sure. And then today, you're like, okay, you know, we could do this, you know. So I guess what are your thoughts on the line and Nebraska's chances against Colorado?
I am tasting the fruit punch Kool-Aid right through this screen right now. Yeah, I think it's pretty incredible that ESPN has this is still 59% chance to win the game.
Crazy.
And yeah, I don't know. I mean, this would be the game that we decide to come out and fuck around and win. But yeah. I mean, you look at it too. They gave up over 7 yards a carry flat on Saturday. You'd think that we're not looking at that number and being like, we're salivating. Like,
yep.
I mean, they gave up 60% of third down conversions too. It's like, okay, well that plays into our favor because we're not good at that. And so maybe we can, you know, catch them slipping a little bit. And yeah, I mean, I can see where we could win this game.
Right.
But it comes back to establishing that tempo of the game. And that's where we really have to just come out and we have to control it. And you got to think that if they win the coin toss, they're going to take the ball and they're going to try and like take that opportunity away from us. And I think, I mean, the coin toss is, you know, it's a formality, but I think it might mean a lot more than what we think it will going into this game. And I mean, yeah, I think we have a shot to win this. It's a clash of two completely different approaches.
Styles make
fights.
And
yeah, exactly. And so I think it's just a matter of who gets control early and who gets desperate first.
Yep. Yeah, who can make the other team do something they don't want to do? You know, can Colorado get up two scores and make Nebraska turn into a throwing team? Can Nebraska take the air out of the ball and slow the game down and limit possessions? You know, who can impose their style of the game on the other team? And
we need to go in there and we need to be Iowa against them, which is it's tough to say, but that's what we have to do.
That's who we're going to that's who we are all season. Like we're going to have to be winning games 17-14, 20-14, you know, 21-20. Like that's how Nebraska is going to win games. You know, I call it dry humping people to death. You know, it's not the sexiest thing in the world, but you know what? It is effective. Unfortunately, look at Iowa. I mean, their offense has been absolutely putrid for years. And I mean, yet they've still been able to crank out wins, you know. So it's like, go ahead.
Nebraska and Minnesota just looked like two midgets in a slam dunk contest on Saturday or on Thursday, and that's what we're going to look like against a couple other Big Ten schools. And it's going to be tough to watch, but it's not as tough to watch when we finally may come out with a win.
Yeah,
I mean, like you said, like we would have felt way better about this podcast about going forward. Had we been 1-0.
Correct. Well, I guess I also, you know, obviously Nebraska is the passion, but, you know, we're huge college football fans in general. What else just on the national scene kind of caught your eye? I guess for me, I guess starting off was the Big Ten West is not as nearly as good as I thought. You know, I had predicted Illinois to be the best team in the Big Ten West. They came out and looked like dog shit. Iowa looked like Iowa. Wisconsin, if you just look at the box score, it looked like, you know, Wisconsin's, you know, got back to business, but it really wasn't. It was a close game early on, and they had busted a couple big long runs to kind of blow the game open. Purdue looked terrible. Northwestern fucking looked exactly like we thought they're going to look, absolutely horrendous. So you kind of look at the schedule down the road and you're like, okay, you know, we kind of need this game won or wanted it real bad. But the Big Ten West definitely didn't look very good. And then I guess national scene was, God damn, Florida State looked good, man. They looked really good. Ohio State can't, you know, we might be seeing Jebbia there for Ohio State. That's how bad their quarterback situation looked like. What did you kind of see and take away from the national scene?
Yeah, I mean, I think three teams kind of stole the show, you know, mainly because they are in the spotlight. But yeah, you mentioned two of them. Obviously, Colorado, you know, no one's not talking about them.
Right.
You look at Florida State, who came out and just put a beating down on LSU that no one really saw coming. And then even last night, you know, Duke came out and just destroyed pretty much Clemson. Every time Clemson got to threatening inside the red zone, Duke got a turnover. It's like, man, are we behind Duke as a football program? And the answer is yes, we are. And so I think those three teams really stuck out to me. Ohio State didn't look good. Michigan, you know, they kind of went through the motions. They won 30-3 against East Carolina. Yep. And so, I mean, Big Ten really didn't show out as much as I was expecting them to. Iowa, even, you know, they came out, got up 14-0. Everyone's celebrating because they finally threw a touchdown pass. And it's like, but then you didn't do anything beyond that. I mean, who'd they play? I don't even remember, but they didn't cover. They didn't cover. Right. And nor they should they have covered because they are almost 28 point favorites. I mean, Iowa's never going to cover.
That was easy money for me. Was easy money.
And so I don't know. I mean, I just think that it's up in the air right now. Alabama looked good. I would say that. And you know, I think
we've got a wide open national championship race.
I think we've
got a lot of good teams.
Yeah.
You know, is Notre Dame good?
I think they are. I think
it's like, okay, is another team that I thought looked really good was North Carolina. It's like, is North Carolina good? Their pass rush, they sacked Rattler 9 times. You know, we watched the game and I thought South Carolina was going to win. And I'm like, oh, you know, I was like, damn, North Carolina really took it to them. And then I go look at the stats and Rattler's stats were like 30 for 35 for 350 yards and 4 touchdowns, no picks. And I'm like, and they got blown out basically, you know, it's like, but, you know, the Drake May, the quarterback from North Carolina, he looked the part. The Pac-12, it's crazy. They went undefeated. Only conference since like 1930 to go undefeated. Every team in there won week one. I think we're in for a really great, exciting college football season on the national scene. And you hope Nebraska can, you know, play a part in that, not like be naturally relevant, but, you know, be where we're not, you know, just sulking every week. You know, it was nice this week. We got the heartbreak out of the way Thursday so we could sit back Saturday and enjoy football. But I think we're in for a really exciting national scene in college football. I think we've got a lot of good teams. And, you know, as we said, I think Florida State looked like the best team. Just sitting back and watching that game of Florida State and LSU Saturday or Sunday night, it was just like, oh, these guys are playing a different ball game than us. And then, you know, you're hearing, you know, every Florida State play, it's like, and so-and-so catch the ball and, transferred in from Michigan State. So-and-so catch the ball, transferred in from Louisiana Tech. And so-and-so the transfer. I think every player besides the six-year quarterback from Florida State was a transfer. And then there was a quarterback for LSU, and it's like, you know, transferred in, you know, he played his first 5 years at McNeese State. And then before playing at Marshall last year, this is your – I'm like – wait, what? He played his first 5 years at McNeese State and then played last year at Marshall, and now he's here? Like, we need to get this shit under control. The transferring, the amount of years motherfuckers are playing. There'd be like one team that would have like a six-year or seventh-year guy be, you know, like, oh, shit, look at this grown-ass man. Now it's the norm. I mean, well, Notre Dame's quarterback, I think it's his sixth year. It's just – It's crazy. We need to get this under control. We got guys with 401ks out here quarterbacking. It's nuts. And the portal, I know. I mean, obviously things have happened, but we wanted like a Rick Gilbert to get approved. I don't want it because you shouldn't be able to transfer that many times. And I don't care if it does help us out or not. You can't have guys just transferring every fucking year without sitting out. I think it's ridiculous. So they got to get this under control, and I'm glad that you heard across the board it. Even that North Carolina game, they're like some Trez Weber, you know, he didn't get his waiver, and it's like, yeah, these guys should have to sit out. You can't transfer three times in 3 years.
Only like 18% of the guys in Gilbert's situation got approved for their waiver right at this point in time in the season. So it's like
should be zero.
I thought it was like
gone to
way
three schools in 3 years.
We're just getting screwed because we're Nebraska, but apparently
yeah. Yeah, no. If you're at three schools in 3 years, man, like they'll be on hardship. I think Colorado had a guy that didn't get the waiver, and he's, you know, Dean's like, oh, his mental health. It's like, listen, man, if your mental health depends on you being able to play in a college football game on Saturday, fucking, there's other things going on. All right, like, give me a fucking break with this shit. Like, it's just everybody's crutch they love to use these days. Well, it's mental health. They just fucking throw it on that, and then everybody has to go, oh, well, shit. I guess, you know, we need to. Do whatever we need to let fucking peacocks on planes as support animals and shit. You know, like that's where you end up. You know, you give a motherfucker an inch to take a mile. Just
yeah, sure
you
do.
Know, so it's
they
like
sure do.
You know, it's just like motherfuckers just abuse the rules. It's like, you know, all these support animals and airports and everywhere. It's just, you know, it's fucking.
Well, they're always trying to find that always elusive loophole.
Absolutely. You know, and then it just, you know, there's something that you can't really prove or disprove. You know, you just. Oh, say mental health and fucking everybody's like, oh shit, I better shut the fuck up and, you know, do whatever you say.
Once they find that loophole, they're the smartest guy in the room. And you know what they say about the smartest guy in the room.
So, yeah.
You're in the wrong room.
Exactly. It's time to find a new room. So, well, let's go ahead and put a bow on this. Unless you had anything else to go over. What are we seeing Saturday in Boulder? What do you think we're seeing, and what's the outcome of the game Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've said it to extent here, but I think we just have to come out and control the tempo. If we get the chance at the coin toss to get the ball, we need to do it, and we need to like have a long sustained drive, keep those ballers on the sidelines, and just kind of take the momentum out early, and you know, just really control the game, just slow it down. We can't have them, you know, we can't have Travis Hunter with all those plays, unless they're on defense.
Motherfucker played 125 snaps.
I know. And then he was dancing in the locker room after the game. It's like, dude, aren't you tired?
Right.
But outside of that, I think just one more shout out is deserved to Casey Thompson for throwing 5 touchdowns on Saturday. I mean,
Casey Thompson would look real fucking nice in this offense.
Yeah. He threw 5 touchdowns against Monmouth. So we'll give him a shout out because, you know, we sure could have used him on Thursday, but good for him for going out and balling.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I guess that would be one other criticism I had of Rule was that, you know, he basically ran Casey Thompson out of town, you know, basically handed over the reins to Jeff Sims without even letting him compete for his spot. And so, you know, it is what it is.
If I'm Casey, I would have been pissed if I had to compete after last year too, though.
Yeah, I would be too.
You know, you always want to compete, I guess. You always want to compete. But at the same time, like, dude, this is my job. You can't just come in and tell me it's not.
I can't blame him for transferring out, but I think Rule put him in a, you know, a no-win situation. It was clear that Sims was this guy. And now, you know, you got a guy that doesn't know how to throw the fucking football. So, you know, that's the bed we made, so we're going to have to lay in it. So, but no, Casey Thompson looked good. So Saturday in Boulder, you know, we kind of discussed what needs to happen for Nebraska to give themselves a chance. I think just history tells me there's no shot of Nebraska winning this game. I like Colorado in a 27-17 ball game. That's a close game throughout, and maybe they score late to go up, you know, to finish it off by about 10 points. But I think we lose this game, move to 0-2, and people are going to be ready to bail. They're already ready to bail, which is fucking crazy. It's like, guys, we ain't used to this already, you know? Yeah. But I guess just kind of seeing the Big Ten West play week one kind of gave me a little bit more hope. I'm starting to think we're probably not making a bowl game, but you know, after this game, we've got two home games coming up against what should be very winnable games. And then the fact that Illinois, Purdue, Northwestern all looked like crap, it really kind of was like, okay, so the next five games, you know, I think are coin, you know, two are winnable. Michigan, we're clearly losing. And then the next three are coin flips. It's like, you know, we give ourselves a chance to get some good mojo built up after this week with two back-to-back home games against easier opponents before heading into the brunt of the Big Ten season. But, you know, I don't think we go out there and win. I think Nebraska goes out and, you know, I think it's a close game throughout. And I think, you know, I think ultimately Colorado pulls it out in a 27-17 type ball game. But what's your thoughts on that?
Oh, I don't know.
I've already bet my $100 Colorado money line. I'm just debating whether, you know, I'm going to dip really deep into that that bank account and take something over there to Council Bluffs and put some money on it.
Yeah, I just, as much as I feel like I should, I can't pick against us here, so I'm going to go 24-21. We pull it out. And we pulled out in a way that we haven't in a long time. We actually like run out the clock at the end of the game when we're up three, and it's not that exciting of a finish, but I think we get it done. And I do still, I said it last podcast, I was like, if we lose the first one, our ceiling's still 6-6. I still think we can get to six wins because we're going to win this one. Like you said, there's some winnable Big Ten games. You know what? I just feel like throwing in a sprinkle of beating Iowa at the end because I feel like we're just going to start rattling off a good little record on them after they've you know, done what they've done to us the last few years. So still feeling like we're going to be going bowling, and you know, I'm just praying that maybe we can just get a little sprinkle of success Saturday and take it into the rest of the season. So
yeah. I mean, God, I'd be on cloud nine, and I would totally change the trajectory of the entire season. But, you know, I guess one of the things I was thinking about, you know, the lack of Saturday home football games we have this year, you know, because it really doesn't feel like football season until you actually, you know, go down there and immerse yourself in it all. And it's like, we've got a game on Thursday and two games on Friday this year. It's kind of crazy, you know, that three of our games are not on Saturdays. So, you know, the Illinois
we got play two Friday. Games on Friday.
Yeah, we play Illinois Friday night, and then obviously Black Friday against Iowa.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So it's a weird schedule. So, I don't know, man. I'm be rooting for us, and you know, if the damn tickets weren't so damn expensive, I'd maybe think about going. But you know, you're talking $400 a ticket, and then that's one thing. it's those goddamn taxes and fees that really get you. It'd be like, yeah, it's $400 for the ticket and taxes and fees. That comes to $673. You're like, fucking Jesus Christ, man. It's $673. So, yeah. But no, I'm interested to see, you know, usually they say the biggest leaps are from week one to week two on a team. So I think it's good that we're able to get a little film on Colorado so we know what to expect, because you really didn't know what they were going to be doing coming into, you know, week one. TCU unfortunately found out the hard way. Anxious to see what, you know, Rule is able to adjust and what the team looks like. You know, if Rule is who we think he is and who he hopes he is, I think Nebraska is going to look a lot better than the national media or Keyshawn Johnson, you know, thinks we're going to look like. You know, he decided to, you know, take a nice shot at us because his fucking stoner fuck up son couldn't cut it here. So, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, there's a lot of bulletin board material going around there. You know, they're, you know, Shador's already taken down all red stuff off his fucking little Shopify fucking store where the fuck he's running. Dion's no red in the building this week. And, you know, sometimes I wish we would get behind rivalries like this, but we always just, you know, we're always just the nice guys. It's never,
we act,
you know,
above it. We act above it. And it's
right.
Play into it once in a while. Exactly. Why don't you get your boys fired up a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you say, you know, yeah, shout out to Dion. Great job. But we're looking to ruin your fucking homecoming, you know?
Yeah. I saw something like, why don't you just put this on repeat and just leave the room in the locker room and just let that play on repeat in the Husker locker room and let them just watch it.
Yeah. Cause that shit keeps on, you know, Nebraska's sorry, man. Nebraska's sorry. Fucking they, you know, I'm like, didn't you just send your son here fucking like three, four years ago? Like, you know, and guess what? Your son was the slowest, fattest dude on the fucking team that couldn't even make it through camp. All right. So fucking like.
Be happy Rule wasn't the coach when he was there. You'd have sent his ass home.
Exactly. He was overweight. Fucking. Yeah, exactly. He was Jeremy Fleeks before Fleeks was here. Fucking.
Yeah.
You know, came into camp fucking. What kind of dude still got baby fat at 18 years old? So. Sure did. Right. Jesus Christ, man. I tell you, it's crazy. It's crazy, crazy, crazy. So. Well, Zach, the season's off and running. NFL starts Thursday. Got any thoughts on the NFL season? It looks like Travis Kelce's hurt and not playing week one.
Yeah, that was real nice. 2 days after our fantasy football draft.
Yeah, was he your keeper?
Keeper. Hyperextended his knee.
Yeah.
I saw it on a TikTok and I had to like go and double check. I'm like, this right. Can't be real. And I got Kyle Pitts behind him. It's like, well.
Oh, that's all right. Yep.
No, I NFL, I think that, you know, my Cowboys will probably be all right until the divisional playoff. And then we'll probably like fumble a snap at the end, just like Nebraska and be 12-4 and nothing to show for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So, anxious to see, you know, how the NFL season plays out. Obviously the AFC is stacked with quarterbacks. I'm really going to be tuned into the Jets. I'm a full on, A-Rod sexual now. Really excited to see. Yeah, really excited to see the Jets play out. And, you know, obviously a 49ers fan, I think we've got a great team. We need to stop fucking around and, you know, sign Bosa. It's like, pay the man. You know, shit. He wants to be the highest paid non-quarterback. Defense player of the year. Pay the man. So. What's that? Yeah, exactly.
He's earned it, but then, you know, unfortunately, that's just going to lead to Micah Parsons getting paid more to him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's how it goes. One guy, the highest paid player ever, and it fucking lasts, you know, 3 days. So, excited for a good football season across the board. Like I said, college football is a wide open race. You know, we could see, you know, someone outside of the SEC win it. I've still taken Michigan. I believe I had Florida State in my Final Four, and so that looks good. You know, Georgia didn't look that great. I didn't think Bama looked that good, honestly, if you looked at the numbers they did. But I don't think that quarterback is the answer, the Milrow. I mean, the guy looks like an Adonis, you know, but, you know, I don't think I think we'll end up seeing somebody else for Alabama. I think they lose early and could, you know, they're on upset alert this week with Texas. So, anxious to see how it all plays out, but I'm ready for it, and hopefully Nebraska can make, you know, maybe not every Saturday a, you know, a head and hands type Saturday. So
yeah, that's well said.
Yeah. So big noon kickoff. I'm sure there's nothing but promotions going around for the rest of the week. So get ready to hear about how good Colorado is. And, you know, I think that kind of plays to our favor. You know, Colorado went in hearing how bad they were all week, and they kind of used that. And now it's the exact opposite. So everybody is, oh, does Colorado have an outside shot at the playoff? It's like, bro.
No, they do not.
They're going to be an 8-4 team. 8-4, 7-5 is where I see them. So that's, you know, obviously three times better than their projected win total. So, but people need to fucking relax on the, you know, the playoff for Colorado. You know, they've, after us and the Colorado State, then they have USC and Oregon. And, you know, the USC-Colorado game might be fucking 78-78. I mean, neither one of them play a lick of defense, but that's, you know, that's the Big 12, Pac-12 fucking style of football.
Be a fun game to watch, though.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, all right, that's it. You know, we're hoping for a big win come Saturday. You know, maybe sprinkle a little money, you know, like me, you know, money line on the opposite team just to protect your emotions. But go Big Red. Excited to see how it all shakes out. And GBR, Zach?
GBR.